Thank you. That song was actually chosen by Dorothy Chambers. For those of you who didn't know, today's service was the auction sermon that was purchased by Dorothy Chambers, which is, I'm hoping, not a substitute for her walking the Camino, which she promised that she would do, but to live a little vicariously through my experience. Start with a poem. This poem is called Last Night When I Was Asleep. It is by Spanish poet Antonio Machado. Last night I had a dream. A blessed illusion it was. I dreamt of a fountain flowing deep down in my heart. Water, tell me, by what hidden channels have you come to me? What have you used to make this elixir of new life? Last night I had a dream, a blessed illusion it was. I dreamt of a hive being built deep down in my heart where golden bees strained out the bitter taste of past failures and made of them grand white combs of sweet-tasting honey. Last night I had a dream, a blessed illusion it was. I dreamt of a hot sun shining deep down in my heart, the heat burning as if from 1,000 home fires, the light so bright it filled my eyes with tears. Last night I had a dream, a blessed illusion it was. I dreamt it was God that I had found deep down in my heart. And now I awake, and it all appears to be gone. Has my life and my heart gone to sleep? Have the beehives of my dreams stopped working? The water wheel of my mind run dry? It scoops, turning only empty shadows. No. My heart is not asleep. It is awake. Its eyes are opened wide, resplendent with the word of angels, returning at last from a pilgrimage, telling of a life that really is possible, a life that indeed is now, even now, being built from the holiest pieces of broken dreams. Anoche cuando dormía, soñé, bendita ilusión. Last night, I had a dream, a blessed illusion it was. Antonio Machado, who wrote this poem, wrote it while he was in mourning and yearning for relief. His life had suddenly been buried under an unexpected landslide of hurt and grief and anger and despair. He'd awoken one morning next to his bride, his newly wed bride, only she had died that night in her sleep unexpectedly. He was inconsolable. And when those feelings that he harbored began to harden over the weeks and months that followed, he built walls of anger and fear and blame in his heart that he thought might protect him from further pain. He might have stayed this way forever, but Machado lived on one of the routes of the Camino Santiago de Compostela. He met many people who walked by, people who carried with them heavy burdens that they also hoped to lay down. And he heard many of them praying on their way to the Camino's power to revive and restore an injured spirit. I grew up with a story completely different from Antonio Machado, and yet I too discovered that love was more precarious and unpredictable and demanding than I imagined it would be. My discovery did not come from any one single event, more from the daily preoccupations of those people who provided care around me. They were preoccupied with stress and fear and worry rather than extending care and love to children and the people around them. And I can remember seeing that and thinking it didn't make sense. What could possibly be more important than love? And when I was very young, I took it personally, sometimes thinking that there must be something wrong with me. But I grew up enough to notice that my parents were not mean. In fact, they were actually just normal. meaning they were normally preoccupied with stress and fear like almost everyone else around them. And as that became more clear, it became easier to understand the sadness that I was feeling and that I was seeing in some of the people around me when preoccupation is chosen so frequently over extending love. It also became easier to understand other things I was seeing, like depression or bullying or drug use or violence or even war. Understanding how completely horrible things become possible once you begin to believe that love isn't reliable. If you take such a belief far enough, you might even imagine how some people could take their own response far enough and imagine how people could open fire in schools or fly airplanes into buildings. Clearly, that's too far. I tried to imagine how it might be different for me and the world, imagining what could save us or save me from such grief. And I fantasized about something rescuing me. I fantasized about my mom or dad waking up one day less fearful and more loving. I fantasized about finding a place or a community, sort of a Shangri-La kind of place, where love was a universal language that was spoken by everybody and understood. And I fantasized that I would someday meet someone who was so filled with love, who of course had absolutely no needs of their own, and that this person would just love the bejesus out of me. And I also fantasized about some sort of religious experience where it became clear through some sort of spiritual epiphany or practice that there was a possibility to connect directly with love or God, the kind of love that changes you or heals you or mends your heart or dissolves your fears. This last one about the religious experience seemed by far the most demanding and the least likely. And so for years, I carefully and methodically focused on my other fantasies. To describe these fantasies as less than cooperative would be an incredible understatement. Waiting for anything to come and love the bejesus out of me, especially when I carried something of a chip on my shoulder, was not something that I came across. Especially through my parents. My mother really didn't understand the concept at all, especially as she got older and her life and her concerns turned more inward to herself. My wife tried extraordinarily hard, but ironically, she carried the same fantasy coming from me. You, by the way, as just the most recent community that I held up as a potential Shangri-La paradise kind of place in whose company I could come and stand and be adored and revered and healed, were profoundly disappointing. And so it was that I turned to the nuclear option of doing a spiritual pilgrimage. I had heard about the Camino some years ago in seminary in a course on sacramental theology. And people who had done the Camino came to talk to us about it. On my two sabbaticals, one in 2005 to Greece and Turkey and the other one in 2009 to Italy, on both of them I encountered people who were on their way to walk the Camino. Everybody who I'd met were good people, the kind of people that I wanted to be. But all of them talked about carrying a very heavy weight that they had to learn to let go of. All of them carried a dream for relief. All of them prayed in a different way. They hoped, like me, that such a walk could be their prayer. Anoche, cuando dormía, Sonia bendita ilusión. Last night I had a dream. A blessed illusion it was. It starts out like dreams often do, in a strange place with strange people called together on an epic adventure. At dinner the first night, everyone is asked to say why they are there on the Camino. Almost without exception, it is so deeply personal, it is too hard to explain. From the traditional starting place in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, the first day we embark on a 28-kilometer walk over the Pyrenees from a town at 200 meters above sea level, over the peak at 1,800 meters to back down to 1,400 meters. It took us 11 hours to do that. And by the time we arrived at the next town, I was experiencing pain in places that, as a biologist, I knew I didn't even have pain receptors. I went to bed thinking that this might be the shortest Camino adventure on record. The next day, my feet were still swollen, my boots were still wet, and I had a blister forming along the side of my big toe. But when all of the pilgrims filed out that morning, I followed right behind them, mostly just not wanting to be left behind. By day three, I had three blisters. Two were on my right foot, one on my left. I walked each morning listening to prayers or recordings from teachers or theologians. I listened to recorded meditations that morning from Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, who wrote the book Peace is Every Step, and I argued the whole way. When you have three blisters, pain is every step. Later that day, I felt discouraged, and at a rest stop, I took off my shoes, as people were wont to do to let the swelling go down, and I wanted some sympathy, so I showed other people my blisters. I showed it to one gentleman who took his shoes off and showed me five blisters, three times the size of mine. I had thought that the Camino was going to be filled with deep, contemplative, spiritual discussions, but mostly we talked about blisters. And those conversations led to other conversations about pain. And I thought that that was odd until it dawned on me how rarely anyone in my previously normal life was really ever willing to talk about their pain or uncertainty or vulnerability. And when they were, it was with great hesitation or with some shame or a sense of awkwardness. This was not possible on the Camino. Pain was everywhere. You could not escape it. And no one's pain ever gets written off. Talk of blisters leads to conversations of other obstacles or other heartbreaks, and people will listen. And in just being listened to, great epiphanies are possible. We don't want to be fixed. We just want to be understood and accepted. And finding that sense of acceptance is the hope that the Camino mysteriously delivers. When people wince or cry during conversations because someone is at the other end of the table with their foot in their lap, draining their blister, and when they share their bandages and ointment because you're out, and when food and water is passed around at every stop, that changes things. Conversations change. People change. You don't forget your pain, but you stop feeling alone in it. Since our emergence on this planet, human beings have all known pain and carried doubt and fear. Why in the world have we allowed ourselves to feel so set apart from one another's pain? The Camino is a crash course in how we normally set ourselves apart. From the first night, you get to understand how squeamishly we become about all the little privacies in our lives. On the Camino, those privacies are revealed as a great luxury and an obstacle for health and healing. On the Camino, you sometimes have choices whether or not you want to walk by yourself or walk in the company of other people. You rarely have a choice about sleeping together. Usually, you sleep with between 5 and 25 other people in a room. Or doing laundry together, which is a daily routine since because you carry everything on your back, you generally only have one change of clothes and you have to wash the one that you're not wearing. And so you do that right after the first thing that you do after you come into a new town. You wash your clothes by hand in the sink and you hang your underwear up to other people's underwear. You are in the bathroom together. You take a shower in a box that's only 3 feet wide and only 6 inches away from the person taking a shower next to you. You often shop together, you cook together, you eat together, you sing together, you laugh together, you cry together. You rub one another's feet religiously and their shoulders, and you help with blisters. You share supplies. And you go to Mass together. Nearly every day after arriving at the town that we were headed to, after showering and laundry, whoever was there, usually even before eating, went to Mass at the local church. You didn't go because you were religious. You went because you could see the souls of the people that you were walking with poking through their human covering. Many days, when the town that we were in was too small for the local priest, we created a Mass for ourselves, and we usually sang the song that Tom sang for us just a little bit ago. We did a Mass for one another where we acknowledged our struggles and our worries. We asked for prayers, and we put our mind and heart toward what seemed most obviously important. But I will tell you, one of the most profound experiences I had on the entire Camino was the afternoon we happened upon a pilgrim's Mass in the town of Carrion, where we stepped before a priest in a huge cathedral. And as we approached him, as we were feeling weak and tired and weary to the bone, he smiled at us with compassionate eyes. He took our head in both hands and he said, "God loves you and is with you every step. Buen Camino." I decided that if you can be present in such a blessing while in such a weary state and come away still thinking that some little distinction about doctrine or theology really makes us fundamentally different and separates us from one another, you need to go back to the beginning of the Camino and start over. About 3/4 of the way through the Camino, I walked a long way with a man named Antonio, an Italian man about 40 years old, who was on the Camino because he was questioning some of the choices that he'd made in life. We got to talking about Pope Francis, the new Pope, and he shared how inspired he was by Pope Francis, that one of his first acts after being named Pope during Holy Week was to go into a female penitentiary and wash the feet of female prisoners. It was the humility of this Pope that he felt was a true sign of holiness. And I mentioned that I thought humility could be a sign of holiness in each of us. And over the course of that long day's walk, we constructed a religious treatise, which has become a mantra for me. It's in 3 parts. Life is difficult. Life being difficult becomes humbling. When we feel humble enough, we begin to see things the way God might see them, and we love things the way a creator loves its creation. And often these revelations come without fanfare. I remember arriving at Santiago feeling a great accomplishment. That was about 490 miles. And I remember wanting to be recognized and standing in line with the other pilgrims to show them my passport and all the stamps of the places that we'd stayed. And in exchange, you get a credential or a diploma or whatever it is. And I arrived in Santiago on July 24th, the eve of the great festival of St. James. And this is when there is a wild celebration for all of the Caminos who have gone. And some of the pilgrims who return on that day just to see all of the people and have a big party together. And the cathedral becomes all lit up and fireworks go off at midnight. And I managed to get a room about a mile away from the cathedral that had a perfect view of the square. And I chose a bed that framed all of the fireworks exactly like I wanted. And just before 11, when I was going to my room, I saw the host of our hostel in tears running past me saying that she had to go. Not understanding much Spanish, I let her go and I got in bed and waited for the fireworks, but they didn't come. There was just an announcement from the square over the loudspeaker in Spanish that I could hear but not understand. The next morning, I got up early and went to the common room. A TV was on and people were gathering around and it explained everything. At 10 p.m., on the 24th, a train a mile from the Santiago train station derailed. 78 people were killed. The announcement over the loudspeaker said that the festival and the fireworks were canceled. The woman who was taking care of the hostel, who rushed past me as I was going to bed, her son was on that train. He lived, but a pilgrim who was supposed to be in the room next to me, who was coming back to celebrate with his friends and family, was killed. Sometimes there are no grand celebrations, no matter how much pain or hardship that we carry with us, because finding joy and purpose and healing in life doesn't come when the world suddenly discovers how to pay attention to you. It comes when we finally discover how to pay attention to ourselves and to the world around us. That morning, a group of us decided instead of celebrating in Santiago that we would walk another 4 days to Finisterre, which means the end of the world, that we would walk in silence, praying for those who died and those whose lives suddenly had an empty space. Packing is a spiritual practice on the Camino. Every day you unpack and you repack in the morning in very close quarters to one another. Inevitably, you sometimes leave something behind for those around you. Inevitably, you sometimes pick something up, something that isn't yours. There is a mixed-upness that happens along the way. Even though you thought you were going to be on the Camino to become less mixed up, it turns out the other way around. Some of you might have noticed that I left a number of boxes downstairs by the fellowship hall. That's all the stuff that is not going with me on the rest of my journey. You are welcome to take it and become more mixed up. One of the things that I did bring with me was a small bottle containing my mother's ashes, who had died 4 months before I left for my trip. At various places, especially places that were warm, like her Southern California home, or places where there were kind people who understood what community was supposed to be, I scattered some of her ashes there. I had thought that this would lighten my load, both physically and spiritually. And I was surprised, even when I felt it seemed to do just the opposite. Every time I left her behind, I felt something of an added weight, like I was carrying an extra burden. Some of you know that I did not have the relationship that I really wanted to have with my mother. I did not receive from her all the love that I was looking for as a child. By the time that I reached the sea at Finisterre, I had realized something. To let go of my mother, I had to let go of the fantasy that someone was out there and was placed on this earth to rescue me, to meet all of my needs for love and security and happiness. Letting go of her was more than letting go of the grief and resentment that I carried. It meant accepting the burden that I had always expected her to carry, that I had to carry that myself, and I didn't know if I could. But as I walked past the lighthouse and followed a sense that there was a smaller path and headed to the water to leave the last of her ashes, I realized something. I hadn't come halfway around the world and walked to the end of the earth because I needed a place far enough away to leave my grief. I came all that way to show myself that I was strong enough to carry my life as far as I needed to go. So you might wonder why, what any of this has to do with you, or this church, or what we've done together. Has anything that I've talked about this morning not described exactly what we've done in the last 2 years? Finding hope by understanding one another's pain, learning how to bless one another and see one another, and see how we are all chosen and worthy of love despite how different we all are, getting mixed up in one another's lives. No one here will ever be saved by someone else, by a member or a minister who comes in and loves the bejesus out of us. But we can all be saved by learning how to love the bejesus out of the lives that we've been given, if we are willing to travel as far as we want our lives to go. So I leave you now in the care of the capable and loving hearts of this community. And though our journeys are not over, I trust that you will follow the arrows that point here to the heart of the matter. And I trust that you will not give up on one another or give up on yourself. Don't stop walking to the glory of life.